You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we're having a three-way conversation about positioning ourselves to meet the challenges of the decade of the 2020s. Part of meeting that challenge for Jubilee One Earth Economics is adding John Michneau to the leadership team, so we're interviewing him as part of today's conversation. Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. Well, here we are, making these episodes in the early stages of 2020. We know that the 2020s are a critical decade. It's just the 10 years we have. As someone has said, we're the first generation to really grasp what the impact of this climate emergency is doing to our planet, and we're the last generation to truly act on it. So, many of us know, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has said by 2030, that's our window to keep warming of the planet below 1.5 degrees centigrade, and we're already a little bit over one. So we really have our work cut out for us. Well, the Jubilee Circle in San Diego is really pursuing what is required of us. We've been feeling our way, thinking our way, prayerfully planning for Jubilee Economics Ministry's future. And an important part of that is bolstering what amounts to an aging leadership. And yes, I'm referring to myself too. So accordingly, I'm happy here to be introducing to you John Michneau. John's just a young in here, you know, just had his 53rd birthday, I think it was. Is that right, John?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Good to see you, Lee.
So here we are. I'm eager to have you know John, and John, you've done a masterful thing in taking a four-page resume and creating a really interesting one-page biography. If any others of you listening have tried to do that, you know that that takes some time and effort. So he'll be sharing more with us as these episodes go along. He's planning with us the trip to Mexico, June 6 to 13. His email will be included in the show notes, so you can write to him directly. We're also, of course, faced with financial challenges. We're going to have to find an additional $30,000 or so to increase funding for the San Cristobal Circle in Chiapas, and also then the rest is really for leadership development in all of our circles, and certainly here in San Diego. Well, let's talk with some of the new leadership here. John, you've came aboard 1st of December in a part-time capacity, and what we've learned is that some of your values and some of Jim's values have a pretty tight interplay. So explain from your perspective how that works.
Surely. Well, you know, environmental and human sustainability values are so important. And there's this story that Jesus tells of the pearl of great price. You know, basically this guy, he finds a pearl that is so beautiful that he goes and he sells everything that he has so that he can own this pearl. And so that, you know, sometimes, as is the case with some of Jesus' stories, the question to the audience is, well, what's the meaning of this pearl? What is Jesus talking about? And in this case, you know, I wonder if Jesus were here today, if he would say, well, what's the most important thing? It's our ecosystem, you know, Earth, our home. It provides just the right amount of oxygen, water, and actual plant nutrients in the right proportions to keep us alive and our fellow animals and plants alive. And this delicate balance is changing, you know, due to the unconscious way that we overconsume. the good news is we're creating a new culture of sustainability right now.
And I think, I want to affirm how you're thinking about that little story. I think in the Gospel of Matthew, maybe other Gospels too. But I believe that the Gospels show Jesus to be a very creation-oriented person. You know, his primary field of operation was not the religious institutions. It wasn't the temple, certainly. So his primary operation was out in the fields and in creation. And I think there's a good amount of example in the Gospels where he's reconfiguring how to think about the spiritual path in terms of creation. So so the ecosystem is highly valued thing, and what a treasure, what a gift it is. Well, now when I read your resume, I was I could use a number of words. One is impressed. I really was, John. I was impressed with the kinds of experiences you have in your work, in the work world that you've had to date, the business world where you've operated for a good number of years. So yeah, share your bio in that regard, if you would, please.
Surely. Well, you know, I was privileged to start work as a fellow with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and we were researching mathematical models so that we could predict, you know, what's happening with the pollutants in the ocean and with overfishing. How is that going to impact the different species that are out there? I obtained a degree in physics from the University of California at San Diego, and then I worked as a software engineer in a former division of a General Electric for a number of years. And eventually I switched to being a sales consultant for software to global Fortune 500 companies. Some of the areas I focused on were helping companies and large governmental organizations to actually be a little bit more environmental, believe it or not, by saving costs as they tried to maintain buildings or operate vehicles. And I was particularly interested in how they could save energy. And I worked on a number of large, you know, multi-million dollar deals with the Federal Aviation Administration. Eventually became a project manager with dozens of software engineers, managing the U.S. Navy's large fleet of vehicles, and eventually wound up at the National Science Foundation, working with a team of software developers on a $20 million program for earthquake research.
Well, each of those steps in your evolution has to be filled with dozens of stories of human relationships and frustrations and victories and all of that. But thank you for sharing that. And it's very special to me that, well, there came a time when you wanted to change out of all of that work. So what was going on in you where you said, John, you got to stop doing this and we're going to do something else? And why was that going on with you?
Well, my ambition, you know, had always been to go up the ladder more, earn another promotion and challenge myself. But I found myself wanting to develop my own growth possibilities more and also wanting to contribute to individuals, to the development of other people. I had been, during college, an inter-varsity Bible study leader and a camp counselor. And so I found myself drawn to a communications methodology for conflict intervention. It's known by the name of nonviolent communication, and that's NVC for short. And this is a process based in the roots of the famous psychologist Carl Rogers, who emphasized the beauty of each individual. And that really appealed to me a great deal, Lee.
Yeah. You know, I didn't really study Carl Rogers in a deep way, but I was aware of his emphasis on listening. And there was this one quotation which I referred to a number of times where he said, "It just feels damn good to be heard." You know, just when someone hears you and listens to you. And I just have noticed how when that happens, it's the way we can really help people discover their own gifts and to really pull them into their own evolutionary process, it seems to me. So, so you used NVC, nonviolent communication, rooted in his work. But then where did you go with that?
Well, one of the areas that's useful is teaching people communication skills. So some of my friends and I started to teach communications workshops. I've facilitated a monthly practice group in conflict intervention and mediation for a number of years. And we added other really cool techniques, appreciative inquiry, open space technology, and of course mindfulness, and even something called heart math. And really what these skills do are allow people to embody the skills that are necessary to bring diverse teams of people together and help people to solve problems and confront complex challenges and problems.
And as you got into this, did you feel like this was taking you into the kind of work or activity? I don't know if it had turned into much income work yet, but it took you into an activity that was fitting a whole lot better with what you were valuing as you got into it.
You know, what this was for me was some of the missing piece of my earlier career. I would run into challenges back then I didn't know how to solve, and this was helping me, you know, with that missing puzzle piece. One of the things I did with this was invited to teach at various universities and churches and synagogues. And I found myself really caring for people. And so it was irresistible when after, you know, the recent election, I became more aware of the bullying of school kids. In particular, in our community, it was happening a lot with Muslim kids and Hispanic children. And so I joined a team of people of all faiths, and we worked with social workers at the trauma-informed care team and with the San Diego School District. And we created a new set of policies and procedures and curriculum to help protect kids from bullying. So that was really satisfying work.
Sounds, great type of peacemaking. I just want to flag as we go by this that, you know, Jubilee Economics is really a peace economy. And I won't say more about it than that, but this whole notion of nonviolent communication, teaching the alternatives to bullying and how to handle it, it's so important to embody that kind of peacemaking when we're working out of a Jubilee worldview. Well, so let's take this into the climate emergency that we're talking about, especially here as the 2020s are before us.
Lee, the next job I took was as the interfaith coordinator for San Diego 350. And this is an organization that's seeking to reduce the worst impacts of climate change. We know it's coming. We're just trying to make it less worse if we can. And so my job was to form relationships with clergy of all faiths, inviting them to jointly act on climate change. First through education about, you know, what is the science of climate change? And then also by inviting people to join circles to care for creation in their faith communities. So I ended up working with Catholics, Church of the Brethren, Episcopalians, Methodists, UCC, Religious Science, and Baha'i, you know, just to name a few. And that was really rewarding work, because what it taught me was how much in common we all have, common values, and caring for our children and our grandchildren, the next generation, and how much we can work together. Really beautiful work.
Yes, okay. Well, so those of you listening, I think you can see why in Jubilee Economics Ministries we've been really eager to join, invite John into the, joining with us in on a leadership team as we go into the 2020s. And John, you just bring a whole lot to it, and I'm just so happy about all these different skills that you've developed that you bring along with your really pretty rich life experience. So in Jubilee Economics Ministries, we have some special events planned. You know, 2020 is our 20th anniversary year as well. So we're doing our best to launch Jubilee Economics for the next decade, and it's going to take some real work on our part, and we're identifying several projects. First of all, there's tree planting. And why don't you say a word about that, John? Because you're really leading the charge here with how we're going to do, or how we're, yeah, we haven't really planted a single tree yet, but we're trying to get on the page with others in the community to do this, because San Diego, like many other communities, is, what, 70 to 80% under-treed, if I can use that word? So what have we learned so far?
Some of the benefits of having more trees in the environment and in society, with the urban heat island effect, you know, buildings are radiating heat, reflecting heat from the sun. And so it's actually seen as a health risk increasingly over the next few decades. And we want to get trees out there to protect school children waiting for the bus on their way home in the afternoon, people that are pedestrians that are maybe seeking to get out of their cars and walk from one part of the city to the other. If they can walk under a canopy of trees, this actually increases their health and safety. So there's a lot of wonderful benefits of trees. Of course, some of the biggest ones are carbon sequestration. As everybody knows, you know, trees suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and, you know, put it down into the earth. And then there's also water runoff. When water, when rain comes down, you know, we can lose a lot of that water right out of our storm drains. And trees retain that water in the soil and, again, help cool off the environment. So there's a lot of benefits. Of course, for you homeowners out there and for anyone who's concerned with preserving wealth, trees add to property values.
And we're working, initiating some contact with schools and congregations, and see that as a primary place for our activity in the larger plan with the cities of San Diego and other municipalities in this area who are working on their climate action plan. Do we have any church or school so far that seems to want to partner with us, John?
Sure. I'm excited to say we've been talking to a number of people that are involved in actually best practices in managing urban forests in San Diego. Muriel King is one person we've been working with, who she's an advisor to the city of San Diego. And one of the churches we've been working with is the Catholic Church here in San Diego. One of their leaders in their climate organization has been investigating, maybe receiving donations from people that want to offset their carbon use through flying on an airplane or what have you, and maybe donating to have some trees planted at local parishes or church schools.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. We're not just urging the planting of responsible trees, that is, trees native to the area and planting them in the right places. We're also urging one another to clean up after ourselves, like we were taught from childhood on. You know, clean up after yourself, because we put CO2 into the air. We all do it. We know we do it. But we don't really have a plan to clean up after ourselves. Well, this Carbon Tree Fund helps us do that. We can go online. Just if you look at the carbon calculators, you can calculate how much carbon you're putting into the air. And then if you take it all the way through to the end of that calculation, you'll end up donating to some organization that will do something that sequesters carbon. Or you can take it all the way up to the final click and give that amount of money to the Jubilee Tree Fund. And we can just piggyback a little bit on the carbon calculators that are already out there. Well, as the year progresses, we're also going to have the trip to Mexico, June 6 to 13. We have three people going, and just talked this past week with the circles down there, and I think we generated a good bit of excitement about joining with them, and they'll be a couple of representatives will also be here later in the year when we have a weekend focused on Jubilee, and we have contracted with Wes Howard Brook and his spouse Sue Ferguson Johnson, who have a joint ministry called Abide in Me. And Wes has written extensively on Jubilee and in some really excellent work that he's done as an academic and as an academic who wants to also write for the popular activist. So it's really quite wonderful that they'll be here with us in September 19 and 20. Come join us. Then at the end of the year, we're going to have a party in celebration of where we've been and really launching into the future. I think the party is scheduled in the first weekend after the election. So either some people who come will need to be picked up and others will be rejoicing with great delight, depending on how things go for them. Do you want to say anything, John, about especially the trip to Mexico in June 6 to 13?
Surely. I'm excited to, you know, personally to see firsthand how the Mexico circles are working on becoming more sustainable environmentally. And I think they have a lot to teach me. I know that one of the projects I'm really excited about is a project where they're using to save water by changing their toilet systems. And they're able to save almost as much as half of each individual's annual allotment from the municipality of their water. And so what that speaks to me of is commonly when I think of, you know, my wealth here in America, I listen to NPR and I hear about GDP growth and the stock market. But I wonder if maybe there'd be alternative economic measures, econometrics, that would be maybe more pertinent to this new phase that we're going through with the economy and climate change, and maybe how much water that I'm able to get by without needing to use might be a measure of my sustainability and my wealth.
Well, one of the things that they're doing, as you know, is using what they call dry toilet. We might call them compostable toilet. And they say, They have one operating now, and they say, oh, and there's no odor. So there's a whole lot of things that people around the world are doing to be part of behaviors that fit on living on one planet. So, and also in the Mexico trip, I just want some of you to hear that we also visit the Zapatista movement down in Chiapas, for those of you who have heard about that, the extraordinary impact of that movement of indigenous peoples. So the trip includes that as well. Okay, well, Jerry, I think John and I have taken this as far as we can go today. So we're going to bring you back in here and have you take this episode on out to the end.
Well, fortunately, Lee, we don't have to face this just by ourselves. We have a number of colleagues who are also working on the same kind of search for alternative economics. And one of the best known is Growth Busters. Dave Gardner at Growth Busters has produced a film called, appropriately enough, Growth Busters. It's available on YouTube. And it's just a really insightful movie. And then they have a regular podcast called Growth Busters that's well worth listening to. Also, our friends at the Post Carbon Institute have a number of programs about resilience. And they have a podcast called Crazy Town. And that's really worth listening to. I had the fortunate event to interview Richard Heinberg from the Post Carbon Institute in a previous episode, and I'll put a link in the show notes to that. Then there's the Center for Advancement of the Steady State Economy, or CASE, C-A-S-S-E, and had the good fortune to interview Brian Check, who is the president of that group, in a previous episode. We'll link to that. Also, there's the Center for Sustainable Economy, which is well worth looking into. So we have some good colleagues who are working on the same issues that we are. Because this is also a podcast of Simple Living Works, I'd like to talk a little bit about voluntary simplicity, which is our focus. And at this point, voluntary simplicity is probably lesser known than a newer movement called minimalism. And I'm really delighted because there are some young people who are producing podcasts about minimalism. One is just called The Minimalists. And then there's a blogger named Joshua Becker who puts out regular writings on becoming minimalist. So I surely recommend those. Two issues that are of primary interest to me that I feel are the primary drivers of the climate crisis are overconsumption and overpopulation. Now, overconsumption is really obvious to us living in the U.S. because we use more resources than virtually anyone else in the world, and we produce virtually more waste than anybody else in the world. The stickler is the overpopulation part of that. This is very controversial, and I see the two working together to cause catastrophe. We may be overconsuming in here, where other countries that are consuming a lot less are growing very rapidly in population, so they are also causing hardships for the earth just by greater number of people. And so I'm in contact with organizations like the Population Connection, the Population Media Center. Population Connection used to be called Zero Population Growth for those older folks. I would caution, though, there is one organization called Negative Population Growth that is basically really just an anti-immigrant group. So those are topics that I'm pursuing both in the church and through secular organizations. Well, you've been listening to a conversation with our new Jubilee staff member, John Michneau. In future episodes, we'll talk with Brian Beavers on the important role in our economy and food supply of farmers' markets. Also with Kathleen Steiniger, a medical doctor from Canada, and also a tree expert on the essential role of trees in our potential recovery from the climate crisis. Have you listened to our recent episodes? In November, Lee and I discussed Lee's timely new book, The Liberating Birth of Jesus, a story about able to reverse our planet's perils. In December, Ruth Ann Angus of Yes We Can Peace Builders, and in January, David Hoferer about insects, birds, big ag, and spirituality. Well, do listen. You're sure to pick up thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Time to wrap up this episode. You can subscribe to this podcast under the name Simple Living Works at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Come everyone who has thirst, those who have nothing come by. Why spend your labor for things that simply do not satisfy? Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. The bread in your cupboard belongs to one who is hungry out there, and the coats in your closet unused could warm up the ones who stand bare. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. See how the wealth you acquire is borne on the backs of the poor, whose children beg daily for food, whose land feeds your child who wants more. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Your children who need their own rooms lament that the forest will die, and those who would join field to field must stop long enough to ask why. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. God chose the weak of the world to shame the way of the strong. Learn how to live from the poor. Their wisdom will help us belong. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live. Do not conform to the world. be certain that better's not more. Contentment will transform your need, awakening what God has in store. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.